Hi, Anthony, and welcome back to the Rescue Tales podcast.
Thank you.
Super, super excited to have you here today because we are talking about a number of very closely related topics, but essentially just to give listeners some context, one of the things that I noticed with my dog Rosa recently is she has been behaving very differently with me than with my partner. So when I'm walking her, we've had a lot more incidences of reactivity and aggression towards other dogs. That never happens when she's out walking with my husband. And I've spoken to a couple of people who said they've experienced the same thing. And as I was mentioning to Anthony before we hit record, is it's often the female that I've been speaking to in the relationship that says, yes, with me, the dog tends to display reactivity and aggression and so forth. So we're going to unpick, you know, first of all, what is aggressive behavior and why dogs might display aggressive behavior or reactivity, what some of the causes might be, and then why there's a different, you know, sometimes different behavior with different individuals who are interacting or walking the dog. Before we get into the nitty gritty, Anthony, tell our listeners who you are, your background, what you do, please.
Sure. So I'm excited to be here. So my name is Anthony DeMarinis. I am a certified dog behavior consultant from the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. And I specialize in working with dogs who have aggression and behavior issues. And I go into people's homes, so I do mainly private in-home sessions.
So let's start off with kind of just helping our listeners understand what we mean when we talk about aggressive behavior. What is aggressive behavior and what are some of the causes or reasons why a dog might display aggressive behavior?
Sure. So to keep it simple, aggressive behavior, it represents a spectrum of behaviors. It could range from minor posturing to serious and dangerous attacks. And aggressive behavior typically occurs when a dog is maybe feeling threatened, fearful, stressed, anxious, protective, like resource guarding. Maybe they're protecting their owner or the space, the home that they live in. And then it can also occur in other reasons as well, like if they're feeling a little concerned or conflicted, have impulse control issues, maybe they're getting a sensory overload of some kind, they're frustrated or angry. And then also things like health-related issues or medical issues can definitely play a role in this. If there's pain of some kind or the dog is feeling ill. And, you know, so those are just some of the reasons as to why a dog may act aggressive or display aggressive behavior.
And just on the note of health and pain, I've definitely, and we talked about this before I hit record as well, I've definitely noticed with my dog Rosa, there's an absolutely sure correlation between when she's going through any kind of physical discomfort, like she has a sensitive stomach, change of diet will often, you know, coincide with changes in behavior and aggression towards or activity towards other dogs. So in light of that, let's kind of just shift focus of talking about why a dog might behave differently with two people who, you know, whether they're a couple or, you know, separated couple, but they're two people heavily involved in the dog's life in some way, shape or form, why the dog might behave fundamentally differently and perhaps even display aggressive behaviors when with one person, but not with the other.
So aggressive behavior serves many different functions, depends on why the dog may use that behavior. So dogs can use aggressive behavior to warn, intimidate, defend, protect, or obviously cause harm. And there's different levels, severity levels on causing harm. There's different types of bites. So there's a bite scale, for example. So there's different types of levels at which a dog may cause harm. But it depends at the end of the day what the function is or why the dog chooses to maybe display that behavior at that particular time. So with regard to your question in terms of why does my dog act different with me versus my husband, for example, your husband might display certain behaviors or mannerisms with his body, for example, that might be different from you, and your dog may pick up on that, because we have to remember dogs are body language communicators, right? So they communicate to each other with their body language. And they also read the room really well. So they read what others do with their body language as well. And so sometimes, and I find this a lot with male clients in particular, that their body language might be a little more forward, a little more forceful. And we're also more abrupt in many ways a lot of times, even with whether it's with our movement or our voice. And some dogs are going to respond differently to that, negatively or positively. They may like it, they may not. Some of them may rely on the way that that individual uses their body language or the things that they're asked to do. So they may rely on that individual differently. Whereas maybe, for example, the other person in that relationship may have a different relationship with their dog. So that person could maybe be more of the friend, for example, more of the buddy, whereas maybe the other person in the relationship is also the buddy and the friend, but maybe is also the one that's kind of managing the situation differently or controlling the situation a little different, that the dog may just respond differently towards.
Okay.
And then also the other thing that I just want to say is, it could also be that the dog might be in the situation. So let's say we're using your dog as an example. Your dog may choose to be more protective of you because you might be more of a valued resource, or she may feel more threatened in that situation because you're a valued resource, and she may feel the need to protect you. Whereas maybe with your husband, she might feel like, she may not feel that way. She may not feel that he's either the resource or he, sorry if there's that thunder in the background. The weather's not great over here right now. So, you know, so he may not be as valued of a resource in that situation, or she might even be relying on whatever he's doing in that situation. She might rely on him to give information that might make her react differently based on who's walking the dog at that time and what the trigger is in the environment.
So I find this so fascinating, you know, this idea that dogs read us, because we talk a lot about you must learn, you know, your dog's body behavior and, you know, what different behaviors mean and so forth. Sorry, body language, not body behavior. The importance of learning, you know, to read your dog's body language. But what we don't hear enough about, and I'm talking we as in dog guardians, first time dog guardians like myself, is the fact that they read our behavior and, you know, sense how we feel. Can help us understand more about that. Like, in what ways are they doing that? What are they picking up on? Just because I think it would be helpful for people like me and listeners to just be a bit more conscious about how we are influencing their behavior through our behavior and our feelings, I suppose, as well.
So there's so many examples. So I'll give an example of a dog who is reactive on leash when it sees another dog. So the dog may bark or lunge at other dogs on a walk. So it could be something like every time the owner sees a dog in the distance, the owner might tighten the leash, and that tightening of the leash might trigger the dog to react because the owner might be reacting in some manner. The owner might start shoving treats in the dog's face, and the dog might start learning, oh, you know, this is that situation that happened before. So the owner might just start like really overdoing it with food. It could be a signal or a cue to the dog something's happening. The tension on the leash could be a signal or a cue to indicate to the dog something is happening. The way the owner might talk to the dog, so they might start talking more nervously or might do something that they're not even really aware of that they're doing. We all do it, right? So there might be something going on there that the dog picks up. Every time the owner does X, Y, or Z, that means something might be happening. So that could be why, that could be like one example. So like I was saying before, tension on the leash could be a great example, because we all will tighten the leash as we see a trigger in the distance where that might, we don't realize that a lot of times when you tighten the leash, like there's that saying that the stress travels down the leash, you know, so if we get stressed or anxious and we tighten up on that leash, the dog's going to pick up on that as a signal. And so that could indicate or trigger the dog to react in some way in that situation. or I just had a case recently and the owner said, this is my dog. And for whatever reason, my dog doesn't like when I come pet her or I approach her to pet her or try to cuddle with her. She actually gets aggressive towards me. And she said, but my brother, he comes down the stairs and he could do all those things. And my dog isn't fazed at all. And so the dog ended up learning that because the sister in that home was so overwhelming, so overbearing to the dog, constantly putting her face in the dog's face, not being aware of what the dog was communicating to her. The dog started learning that every time the owner approached her, it triggered her to feel she needed to react or even aggress because she felt that every time this person approaches me, it makes me uncomfortable. And she would give off a lot of body language signals that were telling the owner, I'm stressed, I'm uncomfortable, but the owner didn't care. She didn't respect that because she just didn't know. Whereas her brother would come down the stairs. Half the time he would go say hello to the dog really quick, really brief. And half the time he would not even pay attention, like as if the dog wasn't there. And what ended up happening was the dog bonded and connected more with the brother because the brother, without realizing it, was respecting the dog's space more. And so as a result, the dog has this two different relationships with two individuals in the same home. Right. So whether, you know, if you look at it, you could look at it in two different ways. You could look at it from like reactivity on the leash, or you could look at it also from the example of there are two individuals living in the same exact household who act very differently towards the dog. And the dog has learned to like one individual more versus the other. Some dogs, the flip side could be, like I was saying earlier, that some dogs could actually just be more protective of one individual over another. And that could be for whatever the reason is. Maybe the dog feels they need to value that person more, protect them more, because maybe they care for the dog more. Or, you know, so that could just be why, like why something like that may be occurring. With regards to like body language itself, it really is just based on, it's going to be based on what's occurring in the environment. So what you're giving off, are you standing over the dog, like the sister in that home who was overly petting, shoving her face in the dog's face? You know, she was very overbearing and that dog didn't like that from her because it was too much. But when the brother did the same thing, the dog didn't care because it wasn't as overbearing or it was very fast. And the dog was more tolerant of that. So it really depends on what's occurring in the environment at that time that might cause the dog to react or read the room, if you will.
Yeah, I think I love that example you shared because I think it just really amplifies this point that I don't think we think about as the humans, which is like we get so obsessed with, I want to pet the dog and I want to snuggle with the dog and I want to kiss the dog. But rarely do we stop and think, does the dog even like that?
Yeah.
It's just, which is why I'm always, the one thing, and I sound like a broken record, is put yourself in your dog's paws, put yourself, I've come to learn that my dog likes to be pet in a very particular way and in very particular times. Yeah. And I've just learned that when she wants to be pet, wants to be touched, she will come to me and she makes it. And actually when you give them that space, they make it really clear how they want to interact with you. Whereas, and I truly do think it's just about thinking about their needs as opposed to just our needs. Like we have the need to, you know, to touch and stroke. Because I mean, that there are mental health benefits of like stroking an animal, right? But it's not just about our mental health, it's also about theirs.
Right, exactly.
But also it has a knock-on effect, right? Because a frustrated, you know, unhappy dog will start to display behaviors that will then, you know, will then have an impact on how we feel. I know certainly I have felt, you know, I'm just back to the example that you're giving about, you know, tightening the leash. I am so guilty of doing that. Now I've tried to, when I realized and I just reflected on like, why is it also behaving differently with me than with my husband? And I'm like, he is so much more relaxed when he's walking her.
Yeah. Whereas, and that's to your question before about like, you know, give us some examples. Like that's just a good example of you could act one way, which may cause her to become more alert, more nervous, more guarded, whereas your husband might just be more relaxed. I get it all the time in sessions where there are certain things I do I don't realize. Like, people stop and ask me, like, okay, how short was the leash? How long was the leash when you were walking? And, like, I usually am like, I don't know, kind of just depends on how the situation's going and what I'm doing with the dog at that time. Like, I don't have a direct answer, but what I always seem to find is that I'm just more relaxed and go with the flow of the situation. And when I need to get in that situation to kind of help the dog and guide them, I guess is the best way to put it, then I'm there for the dog. And I think sometimes a lot of owners, they're reactive instead of proactive, I guess is the best way to say it. And that can cause more behavior problems to increase or to show up as time goes on.
Yeah.
So I think that's really an important point that you bring up, is that the way in which someone's acting or behaving with the dog may cause the dog to do certain things that may show up differently for one versus the other.
Mm. I think, yeah. And I think, you know, I was saying earlier, I have two hypotheses about my dog's behavior. One is that discomfort from a change in diet. So we've reverted to the previous diet and the behavior has changed somewhat, but also the other element is definitely my behavior and just me being a lot more conscious about the fact that as soon as I see a dog, I tense up. My voice probably changed and I don't even realize it changes. And I was doing the whole like shoving treats down her face.
Yeah, without realizing it. Like a lot of people do it. Like, it's one thing if we're using food to counter condition and desensitize to try and create a positive association between the scary thing, the trigger, the thing that causes it to react and make it positive. Yeah. But it's another thing when we become a Pez dispenser shoving food in the dog's face for no reason, because it doesn't make sense at that time to the dog, unless you're doing it to just distract her, to get her out of the situation. Yeah. But otherwise, it's like, it doesn't make sense to the dog.
Yeah. And no, completely. And I just now thinking from Rosa's standpoint, suddenly I'm giving her a bunch of food. Suddenly my voice changes. Suddenly the leash is tighter. So, I mean, that is just really confusing. And one thing that Kim Brophy said when I interviewed her that just really stuck with me, she said, confusion is cruel and clarity is kindness. Mm-hmm. And I really, really like that, because I think often we give mixed messages to our dogs and then they react to those mixed messages in a way that we don't think is appropriate. And then we either turn around and get impatient or yell at them or, you know, punish them in some way, shape or form. And that must be so bloody confusing for them. It's like, what the hell? I was just walking down the street and then suddenly the leash gets tight. You're shoving food down my face. And then, you know, all these weird things happening. I bark at a dog and then I get told off. What the hell?
Yeah. I always say to owners, we know what we're trying to do. It doesn't mean that the dog understands that.
Yeah.
Right. So it always, that's where we always have to take a step back. And like you were saying, like, be in your dog's paws, you know, like we need to take a step back and realize, okay, so I know what I'm trying to do here, but does the dog feel that it understands, or does it make sense to the dog in that situation?
Hmm.
One thing that I do tell clients that I just wanted to mention is, and I think I said this to you when we spoke the last time, I love getting video of the owners walking their dogs separately. So that could be that each owner follows each other and hangs back 20 feet and we get video footage of that.
Mm.
So we could compare what the one owner in the home is doing versus what the other one is doing, good or bad. And we see what the dog's responses are or how the owner responds. Like, you might have one owner who they're like, I'm going to do all the training, I'm going to do this and that, but they start like getting too nervous and anxious and they're dragging the dog off and everything. And then you have the other owner who's like, Yeah, I'm not bringing treats, and you're lucky the dog has a leash on, and I'm just going to roll with it. And when the dog reacts, the owner just kind of is like, all right, whatever, let's keep going. And then we find out later, oh, well, it's interesting. Who knew that the dog was actually doing so much better with me because of that? Because you didn't like care at all, you know?
I mean, that's such a great point, because, you know, I find that hilarious, because that is, you know, that last example is exactly my husband. It's exactly like, he doesn't take treats, and he doesn't take treats because he doesn't like the stinkiness of the, because she's on hypoallergenic treats and they don't smell great. Well, I don't think any dog treats smell particularly nice, but he doesn't like to get his hands dirty with them. He's like, I don't need treats. Her reward is my affection. So if she comes to me and I give her a pet, and the thing is, it worked. Like, she goes to him when he calls her, and you can see like this joy of like, I did a good thing and he's going to pet me. Yeah. And then there's me standing, like, she's at the other side. I'm like, Rosa, let's go. And then she'll turn around. This is the thing that sometimes drives me. She'll turn around and she'll look at me, Anthony. And then she'll just go back to what she was doing. Like, whatever, just wait till I'm done. And I'm like, Rosa, can we please go? And then I go into this kind of like whiny, like begging her to come with me kind of thing. It's really pathetic. And then I'm like, Rosa, I have a treat. And it's just such a different approach. And I suppose there's a middle ground somewhere, because I guess at the end of the day, it's like the way my husband deals with Rosa is very in sync with who he is as a person. And the way I deal with Rosa is very in sync with how I even deal with other people's, because I don't like to upset people, and, you know, I want to make sure everyone's okay and that I'm not bothering anyone, and, you know, and if you're having fun and you're my friend, and then I don't want to disrupt your fun just so I can go do my thing, kind of thing. So it's like, how do you find a way of dealing with your dog that's still in line with who you are as a person, your personality and your trait? Because I'm never going to be that person who's super stern and like, it's just not who I am, right? So it's
you know, I think it really depends on every dog is an individual, and we have to go with what that individual feels most comfortable with in terms of learning. Mm. So, or what they feel, like how they're feeling in that experience or in that moment. So I just think that certain things that maybe your husband does, she might respond better to just because she feels more comfortable. And that could be something as simply that she picks up on maybe how relaxed he is. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's getting more anxious because you're anxious in that situation. And I always give the example that we use dogs to detect things like different diseases that we don't even know we have, right? Like, we don't know that we're sick or something's happening, but our dogs can be trained to detect those things. Mm. So if dogs are able to detect things like that, then we know that the dog is picking up on the fact that you are anxious, even if you're trying, okay, I listened to Anthony today and I'm going to be more calm, and I'm going to take a deep breath when I leave, and I'm going to show externally that I'm not afraid. But that doesn't mean the dog doesn't know internally that you're still feeling just as stressed out as before.
Yeah. On that note of dogs being a lot more perceptive than we are in ways that, you know, we don't understand because we haven't experienced. One of the things that you mentioned before we started recording is that dogs are single event learners. Help us understand what that means and the implications on behavior and everything we've been talking about in terms of behavior being different between with different partners, for example, who care for the dog.
Sure. So single event learning, I mean, basically it's like, a dog can learn from what one experience, a good experience or a bad experience, what they feel about that situation. So for example, if you're on a walk with your dog and a dog maybe came up to you guys and scared your dog, that one event could make things worse moving forward, whether that's specifically only with you or in general now in your dog's mind, all dogs might be bad. And that could be specific to when your dog is walking with you, because maybe you did something, you reacted in some way also that maybe added to the problem. Again, like tightening the leash or trying to pull the dog away, for example, or something about your voice changed. Whereas if your dog maybe was with your husband in that situation, your dog may choose not to care. So sometimes just kind of going off of like what I was saying before, that just because we're portraying calmness externally doesn't mean internally your dog doesn't realize that you internally are actually anxious, right? Because so I just think that's just an important little piece to this, is that dogs are single event learners, that they could just learn from one experience, good or bad, what something makes them feel, essentially.
That's amazing, because I remember like one of the, I think we spoke about this before and I've talked about it on previous episodes of the podcast. My dog Rosa is scared of children. She used to be fine. And then suddenly it was like a flip of a switch. And there was one incident that happened where she kind of did a play bow to some kids in the, around the dog park, you know, and then, well, it seemed like I interpreted it as a play bow. It might not have been one, but the kids turned around and screamed and started like kicking the air. They didn't kick her, but like as if they were going to kick her. And ever since then, whenever she's seen children, she has reacted very badly to them. So barking, lunging. So from that point on, she's always on the leash with me.
And what about when she's with your husband in that situation, if she sees children?
So back then, when like this was quite fresh, even with him, there's no way he could leave her off leash. One of the things that one of the techniques I used to address it was labeling, something that you taught me. So every time I would see a child, I wouldn't get too close to them. So I'd always make sure there was a really safe distance. She's on the leash. When I'd see a child, I'd be like, oh, Rosa, it's a child. And I'd give her a treat. As long as she noticed them and didn't, you know, I didn't see any hair standing up on her neck or any kind of reaction to them. And now she sees a child and she looks at me like, where's my treat? So it has worked, and she will pretty much ignore children unless like a child goes by on a really loud little, you know, those little plastic bikes they ride and it can be really noisy on the concrete. It's that combination, or like a child jumping up and down. So I tend to generally avoid, don't go near kids areas. But if we do walk past children now, I'm a lot more relaxed. I'll just make sure that I'm between her and the child, you know, just to be safe and everything. But it's not like before where I'd really tighten the leash and be like, oh my God, it's a child. And like go into full blown internal panic. She's probably more relaxed around my husband because he's a lot more relaxed when he's, you know, generally when, you know, whatever trigger is around. But yes, so I think I just share that story because when I was thinking back to like, why has she suddenly become rat and she used to be fine around kids, like I could leave her off leash and kids be running around, no problems. And I hadn't realized that it was that single event that most likely led to, because I didn't, you know, I just always thought that just like with when you're trying to modify a behavior, you have to keep repeating. I guess I kind of just assumed that for something to become a trigger, the dog has to be exposed over and over and over again to it more than once. But
oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Do you see what I just made? I don't know why I made that assumption, but I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could have just been a scary event that the kids were kicking the air towards her, and that could have been scary because they might have been making noise with that too. And that one event could have just made it a negative or scary experience for every other child she sees on her walk.
Yeah. But again, I think that comes back to me as a human making an assumption that if I, you know, unless it was something incredibly traumatic, I wouldn't become scared of something unless I was repeatedly exposed to it in an unpleasant way. Whereas actually, you know, dogs don't necessarily respond to things that way. So sometimes we just need to be more conscious about reflecting on what could have led to this shift, basically.
Yeah. And one of the things I also suggest owners do is write a list of the things that trigger your dog. Write a list of maybe what you're doing versus what the other person is doing, so the notes can be compared. See if you guys have the same triggers on your walks or not. That way you could see, like, okay, what's my dog doing that's different with me versus my partner?
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to achieve, for example, what your husband is doing, and well, more importantly, trying to achieve to get your dog to react as little as she does when she's with your husband to be that way with you, then you're trying to figure out those missing pieces. Well, what does he do that's different? What specifically is he doing? Is it just his body language? Is he maybe communicating clearly to her that even though you might be communicating clearly, she might be taking it different from him? You know, so just kind of identifying some of those things. That's where I was saying before, getting video footage might be really helpful, because then it can be compared to say, okay, well, like, look here, what do I do in that scenario? What does he do in that scenario?
Yeah. I think, and just on the note of communication, you just, you know, reminded me of something. I know for a fact that my communication with Rosa sometimes is just absolutely abysmal. You know, I was saying, like, my husband will snap his fingers for recall and she'll just come. Like, she'll, and I have a video of this, I will link to it. She is on the other side of the park sniffing something, like really sniffing something. And he's filming it. He literally snaps his fingers once. And then she looks up and then she trots over to him. Now, if that was me, it would be, Rosa, come. And then, Rosa, come on, let's go. Come on, this way, Rosa. So I literally say like five different things. And then from her perspective, she must be like, well, get it straight, woman. What do you want me to do? So it's just probably confusing her father. And she's like, I'm not responding to any of that. But with him, it's just like, it's either snap or it's come. It's one word or it's one, you know, hand signal or something. And she responds. Whereas I go into that panic of, oh shit, she's not responded to me. And then I just start vomiting words at her. You just made me realize now that it's like I do this all the time.
And the pitch in your voice probably changes too,
100%.
As you're getting more concerned. Like just the other day, my puppy Quest was off leash in the park and she decided to go chase some birds, and normally she'll respond, but she didn't respond that time. And I called her, she didn't respond. I called her again, a little more stern, still didn't respond. And then, like, I screamed so loud, I must have woken up like half the neighborhood to get her to come. And then that time she was like, oh, sorry, coming. So the thing is like your voice or the pitch or the tone in your voice could change where that might signal to her to either respond or not to respond, based on what that situation is. So just for that example, being off leash.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fascinating thing about all of this is it's mostly stuff I need to change, not really much she needs to do, as usual. They shouldn't call it dog training. They should call it, you know, people training or something.
Yeah, I know. But then it would probably, we probably wouldn't be as busy. People would be like, oh, well, that sounds boring.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh my goodness. One thing, Anthony, I do want to discuss before we close, because I think whenever we talk about aggressive behavior, it is important to talk about safe ways of managing the behavior, you know, of course, like going back to the original point you made around, you know, aggressive behavior, there's a spectrum of, you know, it can get really serious. So what are some of the, you know, assuming a dog is quite reactive and barking, air snapping, attempting to nip, what are some of the safe ways of managing that sort of behavior? And I know you've got a detailed blog post about this, which I will link to in the show notes of this episode, but give us some kind of high level pointers.
So first, before maybe I even touch on that, I should just clarify. So reactive behavior and aggressive behavior, you know, we kind of look at those as two different things. And sometimes that's true, and sometimes maybe that isn't. So, for example, like reactivity, leash reactivity, reactive behavior, whatever you want to call it, it represents more of like an emotional response to a stimulus. For example, the sight of a dog might cause Rosa to react, or, you know, by barking and lunging, for example. So a reaction, you know, reactive behavior is just some emotional response, whether it's good, like you come home from work, she's jumping all over you, right? Or she sees a dog and she starts lunging and barking. And then, you know, that aggressive behavior, like I was saying before, it, you know, serves many different functions. There's a spectrum of different responses that could be. It could be a reactive response where a dog is acting more threatening in some manner, or it could actually be something where a dog is chasing, actually biting, making contact, or actually attacking, where they're causing serious harm or worse. So I just wanted to put that out there so we could distinguish what the two differences are. And it doesn't mean that just because a dog is labeled reactive, it doesn't mean that they can't display aggressive behavior. They could become more and more reactive in that situation, and it might kind of snowball into something that turns into something worse, a worse response, basically. And, you know, something like actual aggression where the dog makes contact with the stimulus or the trigger. Okay. So in terms of your question was some ways or some things to manage, how to safely manage aggressive behavior, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on I guess the situation itself. So if a dog has a history of biting, we might need to teach the dog to become comfortable or at least tolerate in the best way possible wearing a muzzle. Mm. Some dogs might have more freedom and leeway with that, depending on whether or not they have a bite history or not. Using other things like a harness is always good, so especially front clip harnesses. So here in the States, a lot of trainers like myself recommend the Freedom Harness. It's a front clip that just gets attached underneath the neck on the front area of the chest. And so if the dog were to lunge forward with some force, it'll actually turn the dog out of that direction. It'll kind of guide them away from that. So like, for example, Vivian, who you've interviewed on here, we were walking one day with our dogs, and my dog was he was a very reactive dog. And when he would get very aroused, even out of just excitement, he would start reacting. He would have worse reactions, basically. Mm. And so he was excited to be with Vivian and her dog. And then all of a sudden, a motorcycle passed by, and my dog never, ever, ever reacted to motorcycles. But on that particular day, he decided it was time to react. And he lunged straight out, caught me by surprise, because it's never happened before. And luckily, I had him on the front clip of that harness. And when he lunged out, he lunged with so much force, he ended up turning around facing me because the leash, you know, stopped him where he was clipped. And he was just turned around facing me like, what the heck just happened? How did I get here? So a front clip harness can be very beneficial in controlling certain movements or controlling the dog's movement, so that way it's not making contact with whatever they're reacting towards. Using a back clip, it's not that it's bad. It might encourage more pulling at times. And I'm not saying I don't use the back clip, because I definitely use the back clip on my own dogs too. But it depends on maybe the situation that I'll use that in. So when I'm walking Quest in a village, because she's reactive towards dogs as well, I'm going to walk her on her front clip because I have a little more control of her and where she's going, where on the back clip, she's more free and more willing to pull. And she kind of knows that on the back clip, she has more of that freedom at that time.
Okay.
So a front clip harness can be really helpful in being able to safely handle your dog or remove your dog from certain situations. And then with that, we might even have like some double clip system. Like One of the things I do is I'll have a dog clipped to their front clip of the harness with the leash. And then I get a little carabiner clip where I'll clip that to the collar and then to the back clip of the harness. So that way it's clipped in a totally separate area in the event the dog got loose, you know, let's say their harness came off or something.
Yeah.
So, or you could clip the front clip of the harness to the actual collar itself. So that's another way of doing it. So, and then as far as the leash goes, I usually, for me, I like an 8-foot leash. That's just my preference. It's not very common, at least here, like where I live, most people use a 6-foot leash, sometimes in a 4-foot leash. I like an 8-foot leash because just has it's extra 2 feet. I can allow the dog to have some more leeway with if I wanted to, you know, and then if it's a dog who's maybe able to be more free or in an environment where they're not going to react, that's where you could decide if using either a flexi lead or a long line is worth using, like a 15, 20 foot, 30 foot leash. But that could also be very dangerous because if the dog has a bite history or is going to chase another animal or person down, then you don't want them on a long line or anything like that because they may have more of a reason to get reinforced to do that behavior again over time if they're just able to start charging or running.
Okay, I'm assuming then you mean if you have a dog that's displayed just aggressive behaviors, then you'd only use that long leash if you're somewhere like in a field or like there aren't.
Yeah, somewhere safe. Somewhere that your dog is not going to cause harm or cause a problem towards others.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know I'm going to invite you back at some point. So I'm
always happy to come back.
Thank you so much for taking the time, Anthony. Once again, it's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Likewise.